Bulimia sucks, but you don't, and here's why. The Bulimia Sucks podcast with Kate Hudson Hall will teach you how to begin breaking through the multitude of thoughts, feelings, triggers, and urges to empower yourself to change your painful behaviors completely. You will hear proven strategies and solutions to help you in your recovery, including real interviews with real people. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon. And now, another episode of Bulimia Sucks, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Bulimia Sucks. I'm your host, Kate Hudson Hall, and I thank you all so much for listening. And if you didn't know, this is a platform for people to share relatable and uplifting, but also inspiring conversations based on an eating disorder. And we talk to people who are struggling now with their eating disorder, sharing their personal stories and their difficult journeys and their steps taken into their recovery. And also to people who have overcome an eating disorder. And then to professionals who work with people with eating disorders and who also may have had their own difficulties around food. So it's a nice variety of people. And now I just want to mention that I have written a book, and it's to help people break through difficult anxiety behaviors with many different ways to do this, which is now, as of today, gone off to the formatters. So hopefully the book will be launching, soon, so in August, September time. And the book is called Anxiety Hacks: Techniques, Tools, and Tips to Calmness. So I'm very excited about that. And I'm also so pleased to welcome our guest, who is a returning guest, and her name is Marcel Rose. Marcel is a registered nutritionist and a health coach with specialist training in eating disorders. She specializes in helping women beat binge eating, bulimia, emotional eating, and yo-yo dieting so that they can make peace with their bodies and heal their relationship with food. For many women, this is a transformational experience, so they're able to reclaim their life. Now, as I said, Marcel has joined us before in episode 92, where she shared some valuable information on disordered eating, gut symptoms and problems, and plus so much more. So check that out. But today, Marcel is joining us to discuss further excellent, helpful information about bloating, gas, and food intolerances, about metabolism, the set point theory, and lots more juicy information that we all need to hear. So, Marcel, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me back. Delighted to be back.
Oh, it's fabulous to have you here again. So, you know, episode 92 was just so helpful and so much great information that you'd shared. So it's we're very lucky to have you back. Thank you for that. So where do you feel you would like to start? What do you think we could talk about to begin with?
Well, we did start talking quite a bit about gut health a little bit last time, and bloating, and, you know, that there's such a connection with that, with people struggling with eating disorders or any kind of disordered eating. So it could be a good place to start.
Yeah. So maybe we can start with bloating, because I know that, you know, for many people that are going through recovery, it's a difficult, challenging issue.
Yes.
And so what would you say about that? What can people do about that?
I mean, I personally find, and I'm sure you do with your clients, that bloating can really be very triggering for many people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I try and do when I'm working with people is to try and talk a little bit around the actual biological processes that are going on, so they have an understanding of what's going on inside their gut, because they have that feeling very often that it's a feeling of fatness, when actually it's a feeling of, you know, it's actually gas that's sort of been created naturally by our bacteria when they're fermenting food inside our gut. And I try and help people to sort of visualize that, to sort of separate that from that feeling of sort of fatness that can be so triggering for them.
So how can they separate that? How do you suggest people visualize that?
So I really just taught them through the process of thinking about what might be happening if they're eating, you know, they're eating certain foods, or perhaps it's not the food, not necessarily the type of food, not necessarily the amount of food that's causing the bloating. Sometimes it's literally just the stress that they're under, and they're in their stress response when they're eating. So, if they are, you know, having these thoughts about I shouldn't be eating this, I've eaten too much, all of that kind of those kind of unhelpful thoughts, they're sort of obviously triggering that stress response, which in effect shuts down their digestive system from working as it should. So they're sort of pumping all their blood and all the energy is diverted away from the digestive system into their muscles, ready to fight or flight. So actually all the things, the processes that are supposed to be happening, so if you think about for digestion where it starts, you know, it starts with really just smelling the food, looking at the food, starting getting saliva going in your mouth because that contains some digestive enzymes, then that sort of stimulates the other digestive processes, so the release of digestive enzymes further down in the digestive tract, also hydrochloric acid in the stomach to break down your food, things like your muscular actions within your gut, you know, the peristalsis, and all of that stuff is not working as it should because we are in that state of stress. So I try and flip it on its head and talk about how actually, if you think about that, things are not being broken down properly. Perhaps there is, it could be that there are bacterial, just the bacteria that lies naturally in our gut, but, you know, they're the food's not being digested properly so that they could be fermenting that food and create, and when they ferment food, they release a lot of gas and creates that feeling of sort of distension and bloating.
So I suppose it's having some tools to be able to calm yourself as you eat.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things that I talk about a lot is really trying to bring the mindfulness into the eating. So even if they don't think that they're stressed when they're eating, very commonly people are. I think even if you don't have that anxiety around food, so many of us these days are eating at our desks, especially working from home as well. You know, perhaps you've got literally one table where you're working from and you're eating there and you're looking at emails, looking at your phone, whatever's going on, that you're not sort of sitting there and in a relaxed state. So I just would recommend always trying to do some breathing work, just some deep breaths before you eat to try and get
And I think, because mindful eating is kind of focusing on the flavors and the tastes, and if that is too difficult, say for somebody, like you're saying with the breathing, they could focus on their breathing so they're not so much focused on the food, but focusing on their breathing and calming their breathing down. And taking that attention away from, maybe what they're not finding so easy about eating.
Yes, exactly. Because I know it could, so for some people that they don't want to bring their focus onto the food. And that's really hard. But just focusing on trying to get themselves into that relaxed state. So a lot of people say to me, it is, is it the food? Could it be this food? Could it be that food? Or I shouldn't be eating this, shouldn't be eating that. But actually, very often it's not what you're eating, it's how you're eating and what state you're eating in that can make such a difference. You know, I think, I don't know if I sort of, there's one client I had, I can't remember if I spoke about her before, but just she didn't come to me for help with her eating disorder. She struggled with binge eating, but she was really under distress from her bloating and digestive problems. So she'd been to see many people, done lots of tests, tried all these different things, talked about having maybe intolerances, all sorts of things, but she'd never focused on her eating behavior. And actually the bulk of the work we ended up doing was on that. And right. That's what made the difference. And we did a few other things, but mostly, you know, the sort of the difference was made from that. And I've found that before with other people. So you know, it can really just bringing in some different approaches and strategies to help with that eating behavior can actually help with the gut health. So it is a, you know, and likewise, it's that sort of vicious circle that if you are struggling with your eating, it's likely to create gut symptoms, distressing sort of digestive symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the breathing as well. So if somebody was not finding it easy to focus on the food, so it's breathing in through your nose for the count of four and then out for the count of eight through your mouth. Mm. But also then it's focusing on your breathing. So whether that's focusing on your chest as it rises and falls and all of the different sensations that go with that, or your tummy rising and falling. But it's just keeping your focus on that area rather than on the food if it's too difficult. Yes. So obviously continue to eat, but actually focusing on your breathing as you do that as much as you can. So you've got to focus. Although you could focus on anything else apart from the food, but it's having something else to focus. But with your breathing, you've got it right there and you can calm yourself at the same time as doing that.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, it sounds so simple, doesn't it? But it can be really impactful.
Oh yes,
I think.
Yeah, really.
Really, yeah. And I think part of the issue, the hardest bit for someone to do that, is to just almost remind themselves and notice that before they go into a sort of state of anxiety and stress, to sort of bring themselves back and say, okay, I'm going to focus on my breathing now.
Yeah, and making that conscious decision, right? This is what I'm going to do when I sit down to eat this food. And then, of course, your mind will wander off and you'll be off thinking about other things, but it's being aware that it's wandered off and not being judgmental that it's wandered off and just bringing it back to the focusing on your breathing.
Yes, absolutely.
And just to be able to calm and relax you.
Yes, brilliant.
And should we talk about the set point theory? Because lots of people don't know too much about that.
Yeah, I always think it's a really important thing to talk about, because so many of the people that I work with, whether they've sort of got a diagnosed eating disorder or there's some kind of disordered eating or chronic dieting, I think there are a lot of misconceptions with regard to dieting and weight loss. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand actually what's going on in your body, which can help you move away from that sort of diet mindset, which is, you know, so prevalent. So it's basically when your body adjusts their its internal systems to alter food intake and your energy expenditure. So what in effect happens is that when you are, you know, dieting or restricting your food, your metabolism will slow down. Your metabolic rate slows down in order to alter your food intake, because your body is trying to keep to a set point range like a thermostat. And the other thing it does is releases your hunger hormones, you know, so that your appetite increases. So you've got this intensity of hunger and cravings going on at the same time. And it's your body's way of how we've evolved to try and prevent sort of famine, starvation, to keep you alive, basically. And you know, the thing is we see an increase in someone's set point like a step ladder. So someone loses weight, then regains it and maintains it, and then they lose weight again. The weight regain is often more than after the last bit of weight that they lost, if you know what I mean. So it sort of goes up in a step. So the more, if somebody is a chronic dieter and or chronic restrictor, that's partly why very often they, you know, can end up struggling afterwards, because if they keep yo-yo dieting, they're going to end up worrying about their weight afterwards, and they don't understand why it becomes harder and harder and harder. And the other thing is that it often, you know, leads to things like binge eating, restricting, as we know. And one of the reasons is because your body's sort of using its mechanisms to try and say, eat, eat, eat. And so it can often lead to that binge eating on a physiological point of view. So, there's two most referenced studies that look at this. And that one of them is a really, really old study called by Ansel Keys, Minnesota study. Yeah. And it's from back in 1944, which they did it to test the effects of refeeding after the war.
It was men, wasn't it? It was just men, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. So it was like 36 men, very controlled conditions. They had them on a normal diet for 3 months.
And beforehand, that they were all eating normally, weren't they?
All eating normally. Mm. They were all different sizes and shapes and things. They were kept on a normal diet for 3 months under controlled conditions. And then they were sort of put in a state of semi-starvation where they significantly reduced their calories for 6 months. And then they went through a stage of refeeding. But what they noticed during the starvation period had started was this real preoccupation with food. Afterwards, they, you know, after the refeeding, they were binge eating and had this kind of loss of control around food. But during this semi-starvation rate, they started to measure metabolic rate, and they noticed that the metabolic rate actually reduced by 40%.
So it's 40%, was it?
Yeah. And then they had intense cravings. And so, you know, it was just very interesting to see the outcome of that. And it took quite a while before people's metabolism could normalize after that.
And then after that, a lot of them had real difficulties, didn't they, around food?
Yeah.
After going through this.
They really, you know, they became very obsessed about food. So, you know, they were, you know, it just seemed to kind of take over their life a lot. Even after refeeding, it took, you know, it took time. So it's really interesting to show the outcomes of that. And we can use that information really to see how, if somebody, you know, is trying to diet, it might not be for some people as extreme. Some people it will be if they're, you know, obviously disordered eaters, but the impact that can have on them. And there was another study done called the Biggest Losers study, which was, there was a US TV program, which I never watched, which people lost a significant amount of weight on, but then they followed a number of these people 6 years after. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was so significant, is because many of these studies that are done on looking at the effects of weight loss or dieting or whatever are only done around up to about a year. And so we don't know that, you know, you don't see the long-term effects. And that's why it's quite interesting. So with these people, their metabolic rate was suppressed even after 6 years. So, you know, again, we see that acting in their set point. So, and they had, you know, regained much of the weight that they had lost. So, you know, again, it's just showing that why in the long term dieting doesn't work, and why we really want to, you know, bring in a balanced way of eating. It's different. Bring balance back in. It's not about restriction. It's not, if somebody is dieting, it's not that they failed, because, you know, usually diets fail, but it's not that they failed. It's just that this is our body's way of kind of trying to compensate for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, the perfect example, isn't it? To try and compensate, because it's not natural for the body to go on a diet.
No.
So it's looking at the whole bigger picture.
Yeah.
And addressing all the reasons why, you know, in the past you were reaching out for food when you know you weren't hungry for it. It's looking at how you can start to completely turn it all around, how much water you're drinking, how much you're moving. And
yes. And I just find it really important to talk about all these things which often aren't, you know, they're not mentioned in the world, in the sort of diet culture world that we live in. And I think it's important for people to have this information so that they can start to question the sort of thoughts that come up around the sort of diet mindset thoughts, and especially if they're in recovery and they've, you know, they feel themselves being kind of drawn back into these kind of diet cultured sort of narratives, it's important to have these different bits of information to be able to say, actually, I know that I need to eat in a balanced way, because this way I'm going to feel good, I'm going to feel energized, I'm not going to crave, I'm less likely to binge.
Mm-hmm. And your body will support you in it.
Yeah, exactly.
And help you to, you know, it's because it's, the long and the short of it is, it isn't rocket science if you want to become a bit slimmer. It's actually, you know, eating less and moving your body more, which sounds so simple, but, you know, it is. It's beginning to reduce down the amount of food, but obviously eating healthy, make sure you're eating nutritious foods as well. And then just, you know, going out for that extra 15-minute walk or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I mean, it's really about just sort of eating in a balanced way, rather than trying to sort of restrict. And you know, yeah, movement is so important, but I think just to feeling good, I think if you're doing things that makes your body feel good and focusing on those things, that all comes a lot easier.
Yeah.
Rather than the focus being on trying to shrink your body size.
Yeah. And it's being aware of, if you do find yourself in the kitchen with your hand in the biscuit tin or whatever it might be, it's like, well, what was it? What were you thinking about, you know, just before that has caused you to end up unconsciously just, you know, diving, you know, over to that last piece of chocolate cake there, and starting to pay more attention to what you're thinking, because it's those thoughts that are driving your behavior.
Yes, yeah.
As well as, you know, absolutely. But it's also the thoughts as well. So it's starting to be aware of what you're thinking and the patterns that you've got into. And then, of course, some of it is habit as well. So there's a lot of different avenues to address, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. Completely. You know, the physiology is one bit, and you know, and there's so much more obviously going on than that as well.
Yeah.
It's like peeling the layers of the onion, isn't it? To just all the different aspects, working on all these different aspects is so important.
Yeah. And so if somebody, say, had anorexia or bulimia, so what advice would you, how would you help them to begin to break that pattern, to, you know, take that first little tiny step on their recovery path?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, one of the things that I do is just try and bridge the sort of gap with sort of disordered eating behaviors, and trying to get there. I think I talked about this last time, but trying to help them get their blood sugar balance, just to help them on that physiological step with that bit to start with. You know, I'm very interested in intuitive eating and everything, but I think for somebody, particularly with anorexia recovering from anorexia, I mean, I work with people I don't work with people with acute anorexia, but once they've got to the point where they've gone through refeeding, and they're at what's considered a sort of safer weight, but they've still got an unhealthy relationship with food. We try and just work on regulating their blood glucose so that they're less likely to, they're just more likely to feel more balanced.
And how would you do that?
So we just work on what we can tweak with the meals. So we'd look at the meals that they're having and start to think about what we can put in. So what else can we put in? Making sure that trying to get some protein in there, trying to get, a good balance of natural fats in there, getting a good balance of different carbohydrates in there as well, lots of variety of vegetables. And what, going back to the gut bit that we were talking about, the more we can get in terms of variety of plant foods in, so the more we can put in, it just helps our gut to flourish and to have a really healthy, balanced gut, which all helps. So so we're thinking about all the, what we can put in rather than what we're taking out. And very slowly working on things. With someone who has been sort of a restrictive eater and they may have a lot of anxiety about certain foods and bringing things like natural fats in back into their diet, we would work looking maybe at a traffic light system of their foods. So breaking down what foods, what are their red foods, what do they find most anxiety inducing, what are their amber foods and their green foods, and perhaps we'd start to introduce maybe one or two each session, talk about which ones would they like to try to introduce, maybe of the amber foods first, and then bring them in very slowly so they feel like they're able to do it. And then, just notice, was it okay? We talk about it afterwards. How was it introducing that? And the reaction is, it was actually fine. It was just the anxiety before may have been there, but after they ate it, it was okay. And the more that they then consistently ate that food, it just became more normalized and there was less anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that fat is a difficult, not a very easy one for many people.
Yeah, yes.
And it's understanding the differences between the trans fats and the healthy fats.
Yes, yeah. And that's what I say, just try and bring in those, the fats that are going to actually be really beneficial to them and really help with so many things that are so important, and help them to feel satiated so they're less likely to feel that sort of hunger that they might have had once they start reintroducing foods.
Yeah, yeah. And tell us about the healthy fats that they could focus on.
So healthy fats are, things like nuts and seeds contain lots of healthy fats. Thinking about omega-3 fats particularly, so important fish for our brain. Yeah, so oily fish, salmon, mackerel, herring, anchovies, those fish are particularly great oily fish. So those omega-3s, we can get omega-3s also from nuts and seeds. But there is a particular type of omega-3 forms called DHA and EPA, and they are found specifically in the oily fish. And those are the ones that actually our brain uses, that they're key for our brain health particularly. Now, most of us what we do is other forms of omega-3, we can convert using enzymes that we have into that form eventually through different pathways. But what happens is with some people, they might just genetically, some people don't have, they have slight alterations so that they don't perhaps produce enough of those enzymes. So it is quite useful to have that. For some people, if you are vegan or vegetarian and you don't want to eat oily fish, you can actually get algae form of supplements that you can get the that form of omega-3. But obviously eating lots of nuts and seeds, really helpful.
So is it any nuts? I know it's the unsalted, unfortunately.
Yeah, so unsalted, unroasted, ideally. But then what I do say is there's no reason why, if you enjoy salted roasted nuts, to have them part of a balance. Do you know what I mean? It's not about taking things out, but it's about what we can put in. So I find it quite useful to have like a jar, have a big jar packed with loads of different seeds. So flax seeds, sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, hemp seeds, you know, keep them in the jar, and I keep them in the fridge because that keeps them nice and fresh.
Oh, does it? All right.
Yeah, and then just sprinkle them on, you know, on my porridge in the morning or on salads.
Yeah.
And you're just, I mean, there's fear around that because of the natural fats, and they contain those really important natural fats, but they also contain protein and they also contain loads of different nutrients. So it's like you get a lot of bang for your buck with them.
So with your jar there, could you just eat them like that?
You can do.
Some people do, don't they?
Quite small. Yeah, you can make trail mixes with different seeds. Pumpkin seeds are the slightly bigger, so they're easier to have. So but things like walnuts are really good with omega-3s as well. And you know, a mix of different nuts also contain lots of different nutrients. So you want the variety in there as well.
What about cashew nuts? I do like a nice cashew nut.
Yes, no, they're delicious.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Okay. And what about the food intolerances?
So, yeah, I mean, this comes up quite a lot because I have people coming to see me with both gut problems and disordered eating, and I get lots of people coming and saying, I think I'm intolerant to this and I'm intolerant to that, so I've cut it all out of my diet. And so for many years, they might have cut lots and lots of things out of their diet. And actually, sometimes it's just the fact that, as I said before, around eating with anxiety, and then they've cut it out of their diet. And then if they do eat something like that and they get a reaction, it's partly because, you know, their body's obviously not used to processing it, and just their gut, their digestive system not working as well as it should. So, I mean, some lactose intolerant is a little bit different in that is where someone is missing lactase, the enzyme to break down the lactose in dairy products. But other intolerances, other type of food intolerances, there's kind of mixed views on that in terms of you can do food intolerance testing. I tend to not do because it's not particularly necessarily accurate.
Is it not?
No, the problem is that it sort of picks up the proteins in different food types, and very often different foods have very similar proteins. So it will sometimes flag up foods that the individual doesn't even eat anyway, that they're intolerant to, and you know, it can be a bit misleading. So I prefer, if someone has got digestive problems and we are going to do any testing, I prefer to do comprehensive stool testing,
right,
where we really have a look at the microbiome and see what's going on with the digestion and how they're absorbing their fats and all of that. So, you know, parasites, bacterial balance, and you know, it gives us so much more information, and usually there is an underlying reason why they might be having digestive problems, but not necessarily about the food itself. So but it can be tricky because, you know, you don't want to say to anybody who, if they really have very obvious food sensitivities, you don't want to really be stripping things out of their diet. You want to be putting things back in, so we have to work very slowly and you know, work on lots of different things, and it's not straightforward usually.
Excellent, Marcel. Very, very interesting. So how can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Marcel Rose Nutrition, also on Facebook, Marcel Rose Nutrition. I have a Facebook group called the Food Freedom Collective, which is to help people with their relationship with food and their body. And, you know, please do join if that's something, you know, you're struggling with. I do videos every week in there, live videos, and answer questions and things like that. So
that sounds really helpful for people to come in if they can ask you questions.
Yeah, definitely. I know some people find they want to kind of hide a bit on Facebook and they're sort of just lurking, but that's fine too. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's important that we get a different kind of narrative across on social media, particularly because it can be so harmful, can't it, in so many ways. But we want to try and kind of promote that different sort of narrative around it.
Yeah, good. Okay, we'll put all the links below as well so people can come find you as well from that direction.
Brilliant.
So Marcel, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It was lovely chatting to you again.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for all the valuable, positive, inspiring information to help us all through our difficult journeys around food.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, so much to learn. So thank you, Marcel. So that's all for today's episode of Bulimia Sucks, and thank you to everybody for listening. Now, I have a book out called Bulimia Sucks, which is on Amazon, and it's to help you learn different techniques to begin to break through your difficult bulimic behaviours. So if you would like to check that out, you zip over to Amazon, it's on there. And make sure you come and join our Facebook group, Bulimia Sucks, if you haven't already, where it's great to connect with like-minded people and to hear, you know, others and their journeys, what they're going through. So come find us there. So that's all for today's episode. And I look forward to chatting with you in the next episode.
Bulimia Sucks, but you don't. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon.